The time is 2:06. We move on to hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Hey, I'm feeling pretty good today. It's my birthday. So even though I have some, I don't know, what you might say, not the most positive news in the universe, I am focusing on the more positive stuff, despite all the other weird things that are going on.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're aware of all the things to be concerned about.
Yeah,
but
I'm
it's your birthday, so you're going to keep it light. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm going to bring in a few good positive stories as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I sort of lean towards the positive myself.
We're going to have a lot of fun.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe a little extra.
So how are you doing, Mrs. Future? How's the board today?
Oh, well, you know, it's a little problematic. You know, the old Mercury retrograde making things much more complicated than they need to be. So, but we have all the help we need, you know? Yeah. We got Dave Michaels, got our back, and KSCO is well-oiled machine here. Things are flowing as they should.
Okay. Now, this normally wouldn't lead the news, but I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Apple and Facebook are going to pay for women to freeze their eggs?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You hear that, ladies? If you're looking for a job with all the fringe benefits.
Incredible job perks.
Go freeze your eggs.
Yes.
It sounds like they really want those young people to put off having a kid.
Well, they want those young, youthful years of your life, you know, working for them, eh?
Uh-huh,
you know,
sure.
So you can give them all your juice and your energy, and so they're willing to pay you up to $20,000 to have your eggs frozen so that you can have your baby at 40 or whenever you're worn out enough to not work for them anymore.
Uh-huh, right. Just unfreeze your eggs. Oh,
that's
boy.
It.
The world of high tech, they really have a very different attitude about parenting.
Thinking
than
of you.
The old world.
Yeah, in a statement, Apple said, "We want to empower women at Apple to do the best work of their lives as they care for loved ones and raise their families."
Okay. So freezing your eggs empowers you to do the best work of your life while caring for loved ones that aren't born yet.
Well, it's
a little... aren't born yet.
Right. They say a typical round of egg freezing costs about $10,000, and it can go up to $20,000 if you want to do up to maybe 20 eggs, which is considered ideal.
Wow. That is really interesting.
It's a very personal decision.
Uh-huh.
But hey, when you're in college and you're in grad school and you're starting a career, having babies just is sometimes worthy to put off. And your eggs when you're younger, from what I understand, are supposedly more viable.
Yeah, sure. If you think of women as a precious fruit tree, the first few years are probably even better than the final years.
Yes, and they said also if you use them, there's a better chance of getting pregnant in your 40s.
Uh-huh.
If you have a fertilizer.
If you have frozen your eggs.
Moving and
past.
Fertilizing your eggs in your 20s.
Right.
They said fertilizing eggs. I wonder if you're supposed to get it fertilized before you freeze it. That's interesting. I guess you can save your favorite boyfriend.
Then it's not an egg anymore,
fertilization
I don't
combos.
Think. If it's fertilized, it's called a zygote.
That's giving women a choice, eh? Should I do it with Mark or Peter? Hey, let's do both. So that's heading up the news today on the Dr. Future Show.
All right. Fantastic.
Thought you'd like that one.
I do. Yeah. It's very rare that you have something that's specific for women.
Yeah.
That's very rare.
Yeah. And I really do need to get into some of these heavier things too, like this whole Ebola thing. Now, the most interesting article that I've seen on that, besides trying to understand what it is and this sort of thing and the fact that it's jumping through the barriers we thought would stop it,
mm-hmm.
was about aircraft and about germs on aircraft.
Uh-huh.
It's a very interesting article in USA Today today.
Okay.
About the five myths that involve whether or not they're true or not about germs on an aircraft.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, a lot of people believe that the air in the aircraft is really a hazard. And apparently that's wrong.
The air is not hazardous when you're on an airplane?
Well, apparently that's not the most dangerous. They say the cabin air is fine and the aircrafts are outfitted with HEPA filters to clean it. According to USA Today, the real problems are in the chair upholstery, the tray table, and the armrests and the toilet handle.
Sure, the things people touch with their dirty hands. and their dirty heads and their unshowered skin and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. This was a result of a 2-year study by a team of microbiologists and engineers at Auburn University in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't necessarily surprised by these findings, but they do kind of make sense. The tray tables had the highest levels of bacteria. The seat belts and the armrests were also singled out as places where bacteria can survive.
Boy, this is really an ad for some of these longevity products, right? Like the PureWorks sanitizers. You want to carry your little PureWorks sanitizer with you anytime you're traveling so you can be safe when you go to the bathroom.
Yes, watch those handles. Watch those doorknobs.
Okay, this sounds like a plan.
They also warn you against the bagged airline pillows and blankets.
Oh, really? So now we're supposed to be suspicious of everything we touch, huh?
Well, they say that they're mighty tempting to grab a blanket or a pillow when you're on
boarding. So the airlines just does a big scam. They take all these dirty blankets and they just fold them up and stick them in a plastic bag and pass them off as clean, and they're just not really clean.
Well, they do say that the cleaning budget is what's cut to save money.
Oh,
and
they
hire third-party groups to clean the airplanes, and, you know, you never know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Those minimum wages.
How well is it cleaned?
Give people the incentive to do a good job.
That's it. They said it's somewhat of a secret as to how well an aircraft is actually clean. Removing trash and old magazines is one thing, but then proper cleaning is another. And apparently the FAA doesn't regulate or inspect aircraft cleaning, so that frequency and thoroughness are kind of left up to the airlines themselves.
I can just see them modifying that little talk that the stewardesses give at the beginning of the flight, you know, about how to fasten your seatbelt and sit near the emergency exit. Right. And by the way, pull out your hand sanitizer and spray your tray down for us. And be sure and clean the bathroom.
Yes. If everyone takes their turn cleaning, we'll have a clean craft.
Oh, boy.
30 days, apparently. 30 days.
Ebola consciousness. It's no laughing matter.
But apparently, aircraft are supposed to be wiped down every 30 days.
By the passengers from now on, right? Look out for yourself, folks. Be sure and keep those handles clean. Don't touch them without sanitizing them first. This is the Dr. Future Show. We're going to be right back. Thanks for listening.
Okay, we're back. We're rebooting the board manually right now. It's one of those days.
Yes, the digital lifestyle is so full of reboots.
Well, it's still the early days, you know. AM radio has been around almost since the turn of the century.
Since 1925, I think, was Marconi's big test of radio.
Right, almost 100, you've gone on 100 years.
Uh-huh.
And the internet, though, today is a big day for that. Actually, this week. It was 20 years ago this week that the Netscape Navigator software was first announced.
Netscape, the original internet. I still use Netscape sometimes. It became Firefox, right? The Mozilla company.
Mozilla.
Yeah.
It was made available to download by anybody on October 13th, 1994.
Hey, that was yesterday.
I know, this week. That's why I said this week. Because today would be the first day that everyone in mass
would be. That was on Dave Michael's birthday.
Yes, the Netscape Navigator happened.
That's right.
Gee, you wonder what he was doing 20 years ago today.
Yeah, well, he probably was not surfing the web.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Do you think we were? Do you think we were on that first day when Netscape?
I know that we launched our website that year. So
1994, October. So
yeah.
Good chance of it.
Yeah, but probably not on that day. But maybe because we had the thing that was just prior to Mozilla, it was Mozilla then became Netscape. Navigator.
Yes, that's right. It was a simpler interface.
But we were on Mozilla.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we probably were. We should look at our records. But I bet you it was. They have a picture of it up on the link that I have for this. You
truth
can look at the
told,
original.
We were kind of computer nerds way back when.
Netscape.
Like that's what got us together.
And remember, we're going to be talking about that more extensively in the second hour.
Uh-huh, right. Yeah. We have another less nerdy computer nerd who started the
more
digital
of a historian and all this.
Coming. Yeah. Yes, maybe. One of our dear friends.
Where art meets science.
Great stories of those days.
So anyway, it's very interesting. It was 20 years ago that Netscape Navigator got us all into this crazy world that we find ourselves in today.
Yeah, right. Well, there you go. One for the history books.
Yeah. The secretive military Air Force space plane called the X-37B is going to be landing today in California. That's a very interesting thing. The X-37B is a space plane that kind of looks like the shuttle, only it's much smaller. It's only about 30 feet long, and it has been living in space for a couple of hundred days, as far as we know, doing strange and nefarious secret intelligence work up in orbit. People have been speculating what it's been doing. There's rumors about it using ground-penetrating radar to look at the Earth from space so that you can look below the surface of the planet while you're in orbit.
These are rumors?
These are stories, speculations as to who really knows.
Yeah, so who gets to look at that?
Air Force.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and whoever works with Air Force.
And so this...
It's a robotic space plane. You think our Air Force would depend on the Russians for launching things into space?
Seems unlikely.
Right, yeah, unlikely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we do have space capability, we just don't have, the civilians don't have it. The X-37, it's a mini shuttle. It's been in orbit since December of 2012, 671 days in space. Mm-hmm. There's a team at Vandenberg that are standing by for it to land today.
Okay, well.
All right, so it's another interesting thing today. The other rumors that I've heard are that it has been putting up satellites that spy on other satellites.
Really?
That's a rumor I've heard. Who knows? But that's... What would you do if you had a space plane and you were the Air Force? Apparently, it's also been flying over Russia and Iraq and China and Iran. And
I think it's really amazing that space.com is putting this information out there. I mean, aren't they kind of a space program mouthpiece? This sounds like very official news. It doesn't sound very secret if it's on space.com.
To give space.com credit, they're not talking about the secret projects. And you know, I get those from other sites.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
This was not a space.com article.
Mostly, it's a space.com article. Mostly. But what it's doing comes from other sources.
I see. Okay.
That's happening today also. Apple is prepping for an iPad Air 2 event.
Okay. So when is this iPad 2 event happening?
2 days, October 16th.
All right. So on October 16th, we get to go to a streaming webcast of Apple talking about new iPads?
That's the story. A few things. The iPads are part of it. A more exciting rumor is that there's a change in the iPad's display. It's going to go triple retina, which is even higher resolution. There was a developer, Hans Souza, who said he found code in the iOS 8 beta for the iPad, an iPhone that points to triple retina support. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye open for more image quality in the upcoming displays of the iPad. They're calling it the iPad Air 2. And typically Apple has announced updates on their tablet every October. They're also looking at a Touch ID fingerprint to the new iPad and the color gold so it can match the new iPhone.
Okay, there you go. A little heads up for those iPad watchers. We know you're out there.
Yeah, there is also rumors about a bigger one, a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, though a lot of analysts think that's going to be pushed back a little bit in time. There is also supposedly an iPad mini upgrade as they push those out every year as well. Also, they're expected to announce a new iMac 27-inch with 5K resolution. That's much higher than the current ones. 5K resolution. It was rumored to be tested in late September. Currently, the resolution is more like 3.5K.
Okay.
It's a 2560 by 1440. And also, there's supposed to be a redesigned 12-inch MacBook Pro in the works as well. We'll have more of a report next week when we actually know what comes out from that event. We'll bring on Taylor Barcroft, Barcroft has...
Mr. Barcode. Mr. Apple Barcode.
He keeps us up to date on this very well, I think. And he's got the passion for it.
Absolutely.
Me, I probably could use a new one. I've got an old iPad 3, and it's showing its age at this point.
That's true. It's been through a lot, though. You did a good job keeping it functional.
And it's looking good. I'm using it now.
Yeah.
Also in the news, there's a very cool story on some new battery breakthrough. Now, batteries are the things that are really slowing down all our tech. And this new battery breakthrough allows us to charge 70% in 2 minutes. It uses a new titanium dioxide gel. And this looks really good. It looks like it could even be used for electric cars. And it's coming from Singapore, believe it or not, the lab scientists at Singapore Nanyang Technological University, or NTU. They've created a battery that can get up to 70% charge in 2 minutes and can last for 20 years. It's a lithium-ion battery. Is for the negative terminal, titanium dioxide gel.
Well, listen, we're just in time to go to our little CBS news break, and then we'll come back for more of this news from Dr. Future. Stay tuned, and the Dr. Future Show will be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Michael Olson just asked me about the ECAT project, which is interesting. ECAT is a group in Italy that has been looking at cold fusion, and they're starting to show some results. Cold fusion technology might actually work. I'll be reporting on that in more detail as time goes on. It looks very, very interesting. There is a NASA study to put our astronauts into deep sleep for a Mars mission. A NASA-backed study is exploring the feasibility of lowering the cost of human expedition to Mars by putting people to sleep, in deep sleep, called torpor, which would reduce astronauts' metabolic functions with existing medical procedures. Now, they use therapeutic torpor now for critical trauma patients in hospitals, and it's usually only done for a few hours, maybe days at a time. For this to work, they would need to push torpor to 90 or 180 days. So that would allow crews to live inside smaller ships with fewer amenities like galleys and exercise gear and water and food and clothing and all that kind of stuff.
Didn't we talk about this before, about trying to send people to Mars and basically don't they have to be frozen from the inside with some kind of like coolant?
Well, torpor. The cooling would be done through an internasal system, which is not very comfortable. So you'd be inhaling a coolant.
Right, and activating your fish gills, right?
Yeah, right.
I tell you, it's going to be a pretty weird human who goes through this experimental trip to space.
Well, they say if you cool yourself purely from the outside, you know, you just get in a bucket of water, you know, for example.
Yeah, like Houdini trying to get ready for his jump into the East River.
The body's more susceptible to shivering and possible tissue damage, but if you inhale the cold liquid.
Uh-huh. Then your mammalian instincts kick in and it keeps you warm despite your cold blood, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's a flow. They say once the flow is stopped from flowing through your system constantly, you come out of stasis.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay.
Though they're looking at including rewarming pad as a backup to speed up the process of waking up in case of an emergency.
I wonder if the astronauts will bring their own little electric blankets.
I have a feeling it's not going to be too comfortable.
No, that's why you're going to want to sleep the whole time. It will not feel good at all.
Just wake me up when we get there.
Yeah, really.
An alternative to having the whole crew in stasis is to have one person awake for 2 to 3 days and then hibernate for 14.
This really sounds like a bad sci-fi movie. This could get ugly.
They say more research
personally,
is needed.
Personally, I'm a little bit more in the model that, you know, when we were at the Orbit Awards and we interviewed some of the first space tourists like Mrs. Ansari and Dennis Tito and people who were signing up for their place on the first solar system spaceship. And they were buying like window seats on the planned rockets that would like cruise out to Saturn and come back. You know, nobody has to go in stasis. They can just like be on the Starship Enterprise the whole time. You know, I like that idea better.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? Hold on. We have a friend.
I think that would be more convivial, but deep space is kind of boring, you know.
Bring a few magazines.
Well,
you know? I know internet reception is going to be terrible out there.
It's delayed. I mean, it takes 20 minutes to get internet from Mars. 20 minutes. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Do not count on your connection.
Yeah, I mean, it's
definitely
ridiculous.
You better be an artist. I think you might want to do some of your life work drawings at that point or write your novel.
We have our John in the studio.
Yes, here. Almost John. Famous John Monahan, our favorite local pundit and artist, has got something to say about this.
I'll try my best not to be an egotistical braggart, but I'm writing my book and I'm finding out all kinds of amazing things that have happened in my life that I didn't realize were amazing at the time, miracles and things.
Yeah.
I brought a thing from the New York Times from years ago here. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you guys about that the guy who figured out the genetic code, Francis Crick, was an acid head, okay?
Well, he tried it a few times.
And he went from being a physicist to he got tired of making weapons and killing people during the war, and he switched from physics to biology and became the best biologist in the world. He figured out the DNA.
Right. So
the queen came to knight him, and he said he didn't believe in royalty, disapproved of royalty, declined a knighthood, deeply disliked religion, saying once that Christianity was all right between consenting adults, but should not be taught to children.
Well, I see. Okay, well, that's interesting.
That's one of my latest stories.
Well, he is an interesting fellow, no doubt about it. But would you want to go on a deep space expedition? Would you want to be frozen, or would you rather be awake
like on the boring parts of the trip? Odyssey, as long as Hal's not running the ship.
As Hal's not running the ship, you're fine with that, huh?
Yeah, I've always wanted to go in deep space ever since I was in the seventh grade.
Oh, yeah?
I often thought would be my number one planet I'd like to visit. Hmm. There was a whole lot going
on. Well, Mars seems
to
be the next one that we're going to be doing.
Ray Bradbury believed that we are Martians that were descended from the original Martians.
Yeah, speaking of Martians,
we have one Martian on the line?
We have a Martian on the line. However, he's on the wrong phone line because he's in Amsterdam.
Uh-huh. He can't call the 479-1080 number?
I guess he can't call the 479-1080 number, and he thinks that if we pick up the black phone, which is not connected to the radio, and hold it up to the mic, then we would love to hear his story.
Well, that's pretty Mickey Mouse for a long story.
I think so, too. And bless your heart, Shane, I would love to hear what you have to say. Why don't you call us at home and we can record it, Shane?
Yeah, and Shane has been developing a new technology that will help people, especially
victims,
people who are worried about getting beaten up or bullied or hurt in any way.
And he is a very brilliant programmer and a very brilliant builder of things. And he has really adopted a cause that he has a campaign for, right?
Yeah,
he has
I think it's called angelaswatch.com.
Yeah, so.
And it's about a new app that allows you to help people who may be getting into trouble.
Yeah.
In various ways. It's called angelawatch.com. It's about protecting other people, like sex workers, for example, who have to respond to violence and involuntary drugging and emotional trauma. The idea is that you'd wear this thing, and if your EEG, GSR, EMG, or your various bio functions indicate that you're in trouble, then it would notify people that you are in trouble, and they would come help you.
Right.
It would help avoid problems almost immediately as they're happening.
Right.
So that's an interesting idea. AngelaWatch.com.
Okay, so this is the Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show.
Okay, we're back. So, I don't think I'd want to be frozen myself if I'm going to go to another planet. I think I'd probably want to stay conscious as much as possible.
Me too. I mean, what's the point of going if you're going to sleep the whole time and then you're going to wake up and have to figure out how to exist on a whole new planet with no air, and you're going to have to do that while you're groggy from 6 months of sleep? I mean, it just doesn't make me feel very secure.
You'd rather live.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to take the risk, I want to be awake the whole time.
Okay.
And I bet you 100% you'd miss Earth.
You think?
Yeah. I am Miss Earth. I will bring Earth with me.
Speaking of Miss Earth, September was the warmest on record.
Everywhere? Or
the global average temperature in September was the warmest in record dating back to 1880, according to an update from NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
Okay, so the average temperature everywhere on the planet, when you add up every single high and low, comes up with an average that's higher than ever?
Higher than ever. That makes it 2 months in a row. August was the hottest on record for NASA's reckoning as well.
Mm-hmm.
Later this week, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will release its own data, independent calculation. We'll see how they stack up with this. Mm-hmm. But unless something really weird happens, 2014 is on track to be the warmest in instrumental records.
Instrumental records.
Yeah.
You know, I read an article that kind of debunked the hottest temperature data mm-hmm. because of the fact that the data points that give us that data are not quality controlled, and some of them have been around for 50 years, and some of them are in places where concrete has been put in that artificially raises the temperature.
I know there are a lot of variables, and it keeps everyone nicely confused.
Well, I think you cannot put out a average global statistic with any kind of confidence as if that is telling us what is going on in the world. There is too much granularity that is missing from that data. I just feel like the whole idea of certainty based on one number, that one calculation, no matter how you derive it, comes up with, it's like sitting in a theater and yelling fire.
I'm just reporting the NASA data on this. They've been recording this data from the government since 1880. I don't really want to get into this right now. I just want to report that we have a link to NASA's data that's come out that's showing this is the warmest September on record, according to them. They even have a nice map that shows you how temperature departed from the long-term average during September of 2014. It shows you, like, for example, it was really hot down in Mexico, Central America, China, Northern Africa, the Sahara. Those are all hotter than they've ever been. And Antarctica. Antarctica has been hotter than ever been, and the polar regions are the hottest that they've ever been. So that's NASA. Take it for what you want. I'm not going to interpret it more than that.
No, I will definitely look at the data.
Yeah, okay,
I just like to make sure that it's smart data, because I did read a story that investigated how those numbers are made, and there's room for skepticism.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of some of the mythology that we have from comic books. Mm-hmm. Remember Superman? Remember Krypton? What happened to Krypton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it exploded.
Yeah, and that's how no one believed Jor-El that it was going to explode. And so everyone ignored the data, and most everyone lost except for him and his kid, who he sent out in his own rocket. You know, the great mythology.
So are you accusing me of not believing in global warming?
I would never do that. I'm just saying, let's explore this more in depth at some other time. I'm just reporting some news right now.
There are some smart people who think we could be on the edge of a new ice age as well.
Well, remember that was big in the 70s.
Yeah, anyway, well, now it's again. It's coming back.
I do think that the Earth is a very dangerous place, and that we, as an animal species, have to have survival tools. And one of those is anticipating the weather. But anticipating the weather may not be as useful as having a water purification system. And it may not be as useful as knowing dozens of things that grow in your region in all extremes that are reasonably good to eat. They're just ways of approaching life on the planet with knowledge of nature and your own environment that have nothing to do with global statistics.
So are you saying plant a better garden?
Yeah, I am. I'm saying know your own garden. Know your own neighborhood. Know how you can survive where you are.
All right. Now for something completely different, let's look at new advances in additive manufacturing.
Additive manufacturing.
My favorite
what
topic.
What a breakthrough.
Yeah, I love additive manufacturing.
Also known as 3D printing. Yeah,
that's right, 3D printers. Uh-huh. They're using laser solid forming technologies to produce metallic parts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, laser solid forming, LSF. It's an innovative method for direct fabrication of metallic components in additive manufacturing. This means, folks, that the 3D printers will print more than plastic, that they will print metal. Metal, yes. And metal is what many parts are made out of in our machines, especially airplanes, cars, you name it, everything. So this radio studio, a lot of components here are metal. This will allow us to not have to make parts as much anymore in separate factories. Everything in your room right now is generated in a different factory, from the screens of your computers to chairs to your automobile, and all the parts in your car all come from all different factories. It's a very complex system right now, and a lot of that will be simplified with the additive manufacturing technology of printing metal. So there's been a very interesting advance in this process.
This link was very interesting just for getting an insight to how 3D printing is changing the manufacturing process, because among the things that you can do with this LSF process is you could take out, say, a part in a, they're talking about having like a 3D printer on an aerospace vehicle, so that they could manufacture a new part in the air.
Yeah, you know, or if you're going to Mars, you know, you're going to want to have spare parts without having to send back for one.
Yeah, and so you could just have like raw materials and a bunch of blueprints and then print what you actually need instead of having an inventory of all the things that you might want.
Right.
Or that you might anticipate needing extras of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's great. And I think the future is going to lie in people who make the powder for the 3D metal printers. Mm-hmm. The cartridges, that's where it's all going to come from. It's not about
the razor and the blade, by golly.
Ooh.
Wow.
It's a
boy,
deep harmonic happening in the studio.
In the planet. What is going on?
Yeah, everyone's running around here. Could it be an earthquake?
Well, there's some construction going on. I wonder if it has something to do with the construction going on.
Yeah.
But boy, do you hear that, folks?
Yeah.
We can feel it viscerally. It's like being at a dead show, you know?
A different frequency than those speakers, but still, it's pretty big, man.
You want to say something, John?
You feel that, John?
Absolutely. There's a UFO-shaped object right above the building.
Oh, you're
seeing
things I'm not.
Don't be surprised if we disappear. Oh. Yeah, listen to that noise, folks. That's coming here from the location in the lagoon on Portola, right here at KSCO.
Yeah. What are they working on the side of the building here?
Opening the wall down and by Kate's office.
They're opening the wall up? They're going to build a new part of the building?
Something right outside the window is going to be...
Oh, that's right. We're supposed to be able to throw parties here.
Yes. Yeah, they're putting on a new deck.
That's good.
They're building a new deck.
I guess you all have a chance to experience that soon enough.
So...
Oh, another interesting thing. There it goes. That's quiet now. Bigelow's inflatable module is to be added to the space station in 2015.
Bigelow is a Las Vegas hotel manufacturer who wants to own the first space hotel.
Right.
And so he's putting a spare room on the space station. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, it's an addition in the near future. It's an inflatable room. It's going to be privately built, space habitat. It'll be added to the ISS, and it's going to be taken up by the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket sometime next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Beam. The Beam.
Bigelow Beam.
Yeah. It's a giant leap for private sector space activities on the space station.
Yeah.
It's a $17.8 million contract between NASA and Bigelow Aerospace.
I see.
Yeah.
Somehow what it comes to mind is one of these old superhero movies like Matt Helm or James Bond. And okay, let's put this together with the story about the flying to Mars and hibernation, right? So that you have a smaller spaceship that doesn't need so much oxygen and doesn't need a gym for you to like stay in shape on the 18-month journey.
That's right. If your space is inflatable, then you
yeah,
can
so
take
then
up
when
space,
you get
right?
there, the first thing you do is inflate your Bigelow hotel suite.
Yeah, put that in Mars. Orbit.
That's right.
I'll stay on the hotel in orbit when
then
watch you guys
like
land, you know.
Kubrick in 2001, right?
Yeah.
You spend the rest of your trip in a little hotel room.
Yeah. In orbit, in zero gravity.
Right.
Once it expanded, a crew member will be able to go in and be able to hang out in there. It'll be the city's designing it as a hotel room for his purposes. Now, how NASA's going to play with it, I suppose we'll wait and see. But it weighs about 3,000 pounds. It'll travel aboard the Dragon capsule unpressurized. And once it's successfully transferred to the station, the astronauts will activate the deployment sequence and will expand out to about 13 feet in length and 10 feet in diameter.
Wow.
It sounds like a nice sized room.
Yeah, exactly. Well, right. It would have to be. It's going to be a hotel suite,
yep.
I'm telling you. It'll probably have a little mini refrigerator, you know?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll stay on it.
Then you'd weigh a lot less.
That's it.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. So in the next hour, folks, we're going to have a very interesting guest on. We have Michael Gosney, who started Verba Magazine, which is one of the first magazines to really look at the new computer revolution and technology and art, and really to see how all these things combine to create a renaissance in both art and science. He was started the thing called the Digital BN, a series of events that brought together artists and scientists.
All right, on that note, we're going to go to the top of the hour with a little, this is KSUO on Santa Cruz. This is Todd Rundgren, and we'll be back for the second hour.